Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
We are the dynamic duo today.
We're solo. We're naked.
No guests. Exposed.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. How are you?
Okay, so can we talk about your amazing party? It was so much fun.
Thank you. Thank you. I never knew that I made the best chili ever.
I don't know why you're shocked. You're such a great cook. Like, I'm not surprised at all. The sprouted rice was so good for me. I mean, obviously didn't have the chili, but David had three bowls. Thank you for his farts in the middle of the night. But other than that, he was quite happy. And I loved the rice. It was like perfect. Like, I love guacamole, hummus. It was like an amazing veggie bowl. So it was delicious.
Well, yeah. You have a lot of veggies left over. I should have brought you a baggie full of them. But no, and that was my first time ever using a crock pot. So I was really nervous about that.
That was your first time?
Yeah, I don't even have a crock pot. My neighbor brought me that one, yes. So I'm like, what would I do with it?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but it was great because it made it stay hot. And mm-hmm. I'm always concerned about bacteria, right?
Yes.
When cooking anything like turkey or meat or anything like that, if it sits too long and it's not the right temperature, then it starts to accrue bacteria.
But
so
that was,
I was nervous, but nobody got sick. That's good.
No, it was delicious. I mean, he was talking about it all night. Really, seriously.
Well, it's funny because I kept the corn muffins that had gluten-free corn muffins and the regular ones. But for some reason, I guess people didn't really realize they were there because I had the foil on top of them to keep them warm. So I'm going to use them as like bowling balls or something. You know, toss them.
London loves them.
Oh, he does.
Oh, my God. Loves them. He had one this morning. Oh. We're like, we have to, like, you know, ration it out because he'll have, like, all of it once.
Well, then I'll freeze them and bring you the next, I'll bring them to you next
Oh,
week.
You're so sweet. Wait, do you have the gluten-free kind?
Yeah.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. Oh, he'll love that.
Yes, it was
he'll
really
love
fun. That. And you went before you came to the party. You would have gone to Big Bear. What was that like?
Yes. Oh, I loved it. I loved it. I'd never been. So it was real. I've been to Arrowhead, but not Big Bear. And I loved it.
Oh, you did
it.
Go to Arrowhead.
I've been to Arrowhead, but not Big Bear.
Oh, but you did end up staying
in Big Bear.
And where did you end up staying?
We stayed at this place called Big Bear Frontier. It was really cool. It was like right on the lake.
Uh-huh.
So it was so cool. So it was like,
so you're outside the little town. You get to see the town that's like a little village.
Yes. It was adorable. And then we went to this great breakfast place. The pancakes were as big as a pizza. I'm not even kidding you. Like, and I was like, you know, it said like a big breakfast or whatever. I'm like, all right, I'll order like the two of the pancakes. This was for Remy. They came out, I mean, literally like a pizza. Like, it was like a
roast.
Yeah, it was
and
really
they were
cool.
Good?
Oh, it was delicious. It was
now,
great.
What's it like? Okay, so you're not gluten-free.
Yes.
And Remy's not gluten-free.
Correct.
But Remy is a vegetarian.
He's a vegan.
He's a vegan.
Yes.
And London is gluten-free.
And dairy-free.
And dairy-free. And now David is gluten-free.
And dairy-free.
And nut-free.
Yes.
Except for peanuts.
It's like a joke. I mean, it is seriously.
I don't even know how you do it. No wonder you would never cook. Why would you?
It is so hard. But the hardest one, ironically, is Remy. He is so picky. He was picky before he was a vegan. He had like five foods. And in those five foods were meat. So now we're like left with three. So
what does he eat?
He's just really, like, he gets like very freaked out, like, with trying new foods. So it's very, very hard. So he literally will have pizza crust with tomato sauce. And we're lucky because he never even had tomato sauce before. So that's
like an
upgrade.
Because he doesn't eat cheese as a vegan.
He won't eat cheese.
No eggs either.
No. He won't even have a donut that has butter in it. Can you believe that? I know.
Really?
He's like serious.
He's like extreme.
He is serious.
And it's philosophical for him.
Completely about animals. 100%. He loved meat. I mean, he would have chicken nuggets every night. Like, I'm not kidding you. He was going to, I said he's going to turn into a chicken nugget. I mean, so it's all about animals.
He does look a little like a chicken nugget.
A little
so
chicken
cute.
Nugget. Someone called him Tom Sawyer the other day. When
oh,
I
really?
Saw a picture, and I could kind of see it because mm-hmm. he sort of has this like shaggy long hair and, you know, blue eyes. It's really funny.
And London will eat anything if you put it
London's
in front of him.
London's the easiest. I mean, that's what's so funny. I mean, I feel so bad that he's gluten-free, dairy-free because, I mean, he loves food.
But so many things now are gluten-free
great.
In the same categories. I mean, you get gluten-free pasta and everything.
Yes.
I just love all the marketing, though, and the labeling. Like, things that never had gluten in them, ever.
Exactly.
It's gluten-free. Well, it's always gluten-free. What, did you just add gluten, and now you took it back? You subtracted it?
Right.
So
right.
funny. So what did you do yesterday? Was the holiday. Did you?
Yes, we went to a friend's house.
Okay.
It was so much fun. We had a great time. it's cool. Like, I feel like I'm in the niche now. Like, I have the niche. I have the, you know, the people. It's good because now I'll be living here almost 3 years.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that crazy? So it took a little bit, but I feel like, you know, it's nice. We've got some good friends in the neighborhood. And
we've been on for 2.5 years now.
Can't believe
that. We got over 550,000 listeners.
It's amazing.
That's over half a million. Thanks, everybody.
Yes, it's so cool. It really is.
Oh, so back to the party, though, just to say that Christopher had, like, the time of his life. Nobody had ever thrown him a party. Is that the saddest thing on the planet?
Are you
Except for when he was a child, but, like, as an adult, no one ever threw him a party. So I'm so happy that I went through.
Yes, what you did.
Yes, but I have to learn, though. This is not... Throwing a party does not mean I have to do spring, summer, winter, and fall cleaning.
Yes.
Because, I mean, I literally, because so many people hadn't seen the new floors, I just wanted everything to look perfect. So I just spent 2 full days cleaning on top of all the other stuff. You know? I hope they could tell.
Oh, my God. It looked fantastic. Oh, my God, for sure.
So it was a really great time.
It was. It was so much fun.
Well, last week, Tiffany Luptak. If you missed that show, she was a star. She was a gem. So
she's
articulate.
Such a soothing voice.
Oh, I know.
Really does. And a soothing energy and just a wonderful overall person and practitioner. And she's really great.
And she does such cool things.
She really does. Oh, my God. Well, and she's so knowledgeable. So I love too. You know?
I feel good that all my hard-earned money went to good use to get her that education. Apparently it was a good school because she... She's such an avid reader and wants a quest for wisdom and knowledge. So she's always reading. And she's like, oh, can I take this course?
Oh, that's great.
So not that she has to ask my permission, but I still am helping to fund.
Right. Yeah,
to fund the path.
Right.
But she's amazing. She's awesome. She did a great, great, great job. So please.
Yeah, if you missed that. And a lot of people ask me what Ayurvedic medicine was. So if you did miss that show, she does a great job of explaining it in a really simple way.
And now we can introduce our two guests, Dr. Debra
and Therapist Kelly.
Because today we are actually going to talk about not as much of a fun topic, but very, very important topic about depression.
Yes.
And trying to go into the nitty gritty. If anybody would like to give us a call, if you've been depressed, you know someone who's depressed, you want some answers, you want some suggestions, give us a call at 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. Have you ever been depressed before?
Yes. Remember, it was a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. It is the most debilitating thing. And I felt like there were a couple people when I was going through it who just couldn't understand it. Mm-hmm. And that was even... That to me made it so much worse. Because I think there is this conception in our society of like, oh, we just... Yeah, get out of it. Like, do something about it.
Sure.
Yeah. And like, I think people don't realize, like, when you are depressed, like, it's almost like a sickness. It's like the flu. You can't do anything about it, you know, at certain points. So that was really eye-opening for me, how many people weren't compassionate and didn't quite get it.
If people have not been through it, I don't think that people can really understand it. Because a lot of people just interpret that as meaning you're just being in a bad mood or you're just sad about something. But it's not a feeling. It's a state of being. And I think a lot of people don't understand that.
That's a great point.
Kind of like being, you know, in a state of guilt all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like you're not doing anything wrong, but that's guilt wave all over you. And depression is like that. It's like, you know, looking in the window and all you can see is the blinds. You can't see the weather outside.
Yes.
Did you ever go on medication?
Yes, I did. Yeah. And that was, and you know me, I don't even take aspirin. So this was like a big deal. I mean, that's how low I was. And I think, and that's the other thing that I always tell my personal clients, like, no one should suffer, you know, like that badly. And it's like, you know, the medicine might not be the long term, but absolutely if you need it for the short term, even the long term. But I'm just saying, like, for people who are medicine averse, like, it's like, okay, even just to kind of get over that hump,
just to jumpstart your neurotransmitters again, because a lot of them just stop working properly.
Exactly.
So you're like working against the grain so much. Yeah, I went on medication a couple times. And both times extremely helpful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And I suffered so much also not wanting to take medication because people would say, hey, no, just snap out of it, right? Just get yourself out of it.
My psychiatrist said one of the best things. She was a great psychiatrist. This was back on the East Coast. And she said, look at it almost like wearing glasses. Like, if you're not wearing glasses, things are going to be blurry. But, you know, this just sort of helps you see a little bit better without you straining.
I love that.
Isn't that great?
That is great.
I just love that because it was like, yes, like why, you know, like why suffer? So, but I do want to also talk about, you know, natural and alternative therapies
Absolutely. Sure. I think it would be good if we could distinguish because, again, I think depression is commonly misunderstood. Again, it's not just being in a down mood for a day or something. Mm-hmm. There's two different kinds of things that we have in our DSM-5 as how we diagnose depression. And there's one kind, which is a much sort of longer-term mm-hmm. experience called dysthymia, also known as persistent depressive disorder. And that is a depressed mood for most of the day, for more days than not, as indicated by either subjective account or observation by others, for at least 2 years.
Wow.
So that's one of the criteria. So you have to actually have dysthymia. Thymia. Has to be pretty chronic for at least 2 years, with the presence of poor appetite or overeating, insomnia or hypersomnia, low energy or fatigue, low self-esteem, poor concentration, or difficulty making decisions, and feelings of hopelessness. And you have to have at least two or more of those. And during the two-year period, or 1 year for adolescents and children, of the disturbance, the individual has never been without the symptoms in both of those categories for more than 2 months at a time.
Okay.
So that's different from major depressive disorder, which can be diagnosed within a 2 week period of time.
Uh-huh.
And that's five or more of the following symptoms have been present during the same 2 week period and represent a change from previous functioning. At least one of the symptoms is either depressed mood or loss of interest or pleasure, which is also called anhedonia, the loss of interest and pleasure. And that would be depressed mood, minimal interest in what used to be pleasurable things, significant weight change of some sort, up or down, insomnia, hypersomnia. You could have psychomotor agitation, like never feeling like you can sit still, or really sluggish, like really, really, really sluggish, kind of like that catatonic type of state. Fatigue or loss of energy nearly every day, feelings of worthlessness or inappropriate guilt, diminished ability to think or concentrate, or indecisiveness, recurrent thoughts of death, not just fear of dying, but actively thinking about or contemplating suicide. And, these are really extreme situations and conditions. And when people are in that state, you can understand that just saying, oh, you know, just go out for a hike today and you'll get in a better mood. It's not like that. It's that dark cloud that goes with you wherever you are.
And then I feel like it's like that cycle, because then you feel even more shame. People don't understand, and then you want to isolate even more. It's just very difficult. Oh my God. I remember when we had that, we were thinking about maybe having a guest on. I think she was a very funny author, and I read her book. I'm blanking on the name right now, but remember she was saying, like, I had to tell my friends, like, hey, I might make a plan with you, but I might wake up that day and not feel like it, you know? And it was just really nice to, like, she kind of made herself vulnerable to sort of like put it out there, like, look, you know, I'm so sorry. Like, I can't help it. You know, I might wake up and just, you know, please don't take it personally, and, you know, that kind of thing.
And there's another thing that we often hear is that people will say, well, I don't know where it came from.
Yes.
I don't know why I'm depressed, because there's no, like, objective situational experience that occurred that is, quote, making me depressed.
Right.
But that's why, because it really is a state of being that's largely biochemically processed. We used to talk about it, I don't know, you're too young for this, but in the old days, there was endogenous and exogenous depression. Endogenous meaning it was more like what we talk about depression today.
Uh-huh.
And exogenous was situationally induced.
Yeah.
And that if you change the situation, you change the state of depression.
Uh-huh.
But then they looked at it more as a you know, clinical disorder.
Yeah, sure.
And
do they still separate it, like situational versus like hormonal chemical?
When we do the formal diagnosis, you have to specify whether it comes along with anxious distress or mixed features of depression and anxiety, or melancholic features, or atypical features, or mood congruent psychotic features, or mood incongruent psychotic features.
Right.
With catatonia or peripartum onset, that would be like postpartum, or with seasonal pattern. Some people have seasonal
affect
disorder.
Yes. Yeah, I feel like I have that.
You do?
Yeah.
Yeah?
So I got
it comes
a light
along
box.
In the winter?
Uh-huh. I mean, not here, because the sun's always here.
When you were on the east?
But on the east coast, almost every time it was like October, November, and I'd start to, it was like, oh, winter's coming. Like, I just felt this, like, the sun does wonders. I mean, I don't know how people live in Seattle. I mean, it's such a cool city, but like just that grayness would kill me.
That's what people say. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It'd be tough.
Yes.
I would have a hard time with that. I really, really like and appreciate this sunshine.
Yes.
Sometimes I like it when it's a little bit gloomy.
Me too. Just for a change.
Can't on a norm. But anybody listening in Seattle, give us a call and tell us what it's like.
Exactly.
Actually, anybody give us a call if you'd like. It's 323-203-0815. And we are talking about depression.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So I guess it was interesting because when you were reading the description, I want to emphasize that it can look either way. Like, I think people are like, oh, well, I'm eating, you know, more, but I'm not eating. Like, I think there's this sort of notion of like, well, I'm sleeping more, I'm not sleeping, or, you know, vice versa. But it's like, it can come. Yeah, exactly. Right. Any combination.
You know, as we know, too, like, poor sleep adds to depression because anxiety.
Well,
because you can't self-regulate.
So when I was going through mine was the worst time when my kids were not really sleeping and they were like waking up. And then remember?
Yes.
And it was like my younger one was waking up at like 1 or 2, I think, and screaming. I mean, you couldn't settle him down. And then I think my older one was waking up like, I don't know, 5, something like ready for the day. And it was like, so I think that you can't regulate. You're not thinking clearly. You're not in a good mood. And it makes a huge difference not getting enough sleep.
Oh, absolutely. For sure. Absolutely. And also, I want to distinguish depression from a feeling, because a lot of people do talk about it as I feel depressed.
Yes.
Feelings are, to keep it simple, sad, mad, glad, and afraid, and any combination or variation of those. Depression is, like I said earlier, a state of being. Mm-hmm. So it's not actually a feeling. When we're depressed, we're actually not even aware of what our feelings are.
Wow.
It's almost like a flatness.
Uh-huh. Right? So it's exactly.
Like, oh, I feel dark, or yes. I'm down. Yes. I feel like a heavy weight is on my shoulders, mm-hmm. and I can't change it.
Yes. Well, and I also want to say, too, as you're talking about this, so the medication aspect, just I kind of wish that I had known this, too, that might be a little bit of trial and error.
Absolutely.
Right?
Right.
And I remember you telling me, thank God you said this to me, about one medication that it might make you really flat, and it totally did. There was one medication that I had, and I was like, it was like zombie. Like, I remember driving and literally thinking, like, if I go off the road and veer off the road and die,
oh boy.
Oh well. You know what I mean? Like, it was literally like this, like, you know, like apathetic is totally the word. And it just, you know me, that's not me. It's like.
Not at all.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I also, I'm really particular with my clients about, you know, a lot of people say, well, I'll just tell my regular GP and he'll just prescribe something to me. And I'm like, no, this is a science about finding the right antidepressant medication for somebody. I mean, I once went on, my first one, I went on Desiril, which I don't even think they prescribed.
Yeah, I've never heard
anymore.
I've never heard that.
Old, and it really helped me. I did it for about 6 months and it I was suicidal. I was having just such a hard time in my early 20s. And then later on down the line, a friend of mine said, you know, you're so sensitive. Why don't you try Zoloft? Because everything would make me cry and I would be so like easily wounded and all this stuff. I tried that thing. I loved it. And then some people were saying they would take it like 1 week before their period and just take it for that week for PMS. But anyway, that one worked great also. I'm not recommending that, by the way, people.
Right.
But it's so important to get a full evaluation from an actual psychiatrist because that's what they're trained in.
Absolutely.
And then twice I was on Wellbutrin.
Yes.
And one time it worked great and one time it made me so anxious that I just could not sit in my own skin without like just
it's interesting that the first time it's funny how that
first
happens.
Time worked great
yeah.
So I thought the next time I told my doctor, well, why don't we just try that one again?
Right. No.
Now, is there any, there's also sometimes a genetic component to depression or runs in families. Did you have, and often sometimes it's masked by addiction. So in family histories, people will often not know that they're probably susceptible to depression because there may have been a lot of addiction in the family history.
That makes sense. Mine's more probably anxiety. And this is what I'm learning a little bit about anxiety. There's like a gene within Jews. I'm not even kidding.
A gene in Jews for anxiety?
Yes. Isn't that interesting?
Jewsiety?
Exactly. Jewsiety. And like, I mean, it makes complete sense. I mean, and it's like, because you think about it, it's like the neurotic Jews. I mean,
that
I can say,
funny.
Isn't that funny?
Where did you read this or hear this?
I think one of my old therapists said that. And then it's interesting because my holistic doctor said to me that a lot of times, and remember I mentioned this, that people with high anxiety are low in folate. And so she recommends, so I take 15 milligrams of folate, which is like 15 times, like the, I think you're supposed to take like, and it has helped my anxiety so much. And so I'm thinking like, I wonder if like Jewish people people, or like some Jewish people, like are just low in this, you know.
Interesting.
Isn't that really interesting? So that's helped me a lot.
Links there.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of cool.
So as you, when you said the Jew gene thing, I'm sorry, this is completely off topic, but I had to say this because it just always makes me laugh. When I was a little girl, I was over at one of my friends' houses, and there was like four of us that were really good friends and all from Jewish families. And sometimes people, you know, then it was more common for some of the Jews who had migrated here to still speak Yiddish.
Oh.
And so I didn't always ask my dad what he was saying, you know, but sometimes it would be interesting. And so once we were at my friend's house, and her mom said, "Ess mein kin." And I'm like, "What's that mean?" She says, eat my children. I said, "You're going to eat your children? This is what you tell people, that you're going to eat your children? No, eat my children, please eat."
Oh, that's really cute. That's so really silly. Funny. Yiddish. I love it.
That's my kin.
It's so cute. That is so adorable.
That is so adorable. But anyway, and anxiety and depression can often go hand in hand.
Yes.
And in fact, a psychiatrist will generally, or a psychopharmacologist will generally do an evaluation of assessing for both, because there's some antidepressants that have an anti-anxiety component.
Yes.
But if you give somebody who doesn't have the anxiety the anti-anxiety component, then they can become really sluggish.
Oh, like physically or emotionally or both?
All of it. Yeah. Because it's like, I don't have the anxiety. So there's
right.
Certain
so you're
ones.
Making
why,
me chill out.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that makes
which
sense.
Which is why when a friend will say to a friend, "Oh, we'll try this. I thought it was great."
Yes.
That does not necessarily mean that it's going to be great for your own personal chemistry.
It is kind of strange how it's like so individual. I mean, almost with any medication, I guess. Like, but I'm always the type, it's so funny, I'm always like the type that has some sort of reaction. I think that's why I was so terrified to get on. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Lexapro, the one that made me totally flat, like gave me headaches. I remember.
I've heard that from some people.
I had headaches for like 10 days. And then, but Prozac, I had zero like issues. Isn't that interesting?
That is interesting.
And so it's really funny how everybody's just different.
And each one also affects different different neurochemistry.
Yes.
Right? And some work more on serotonin, like that serotonin, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, also known as SSRIs.
Yeah.
And then there are those that work more on norepinephrine and others that work on gabapentin and so, or GABA. Yeah.
And what does the Wellbutrin do? Isn't it like a totally separate one?
I think so, yeah. I don't know. I haven't taken my latest psychopharmacology update.
But I think that's the one that like doesn't even fit with any, like they don't even know how it works. It's kind of interesting.
When I worked at an eating disorder facility, and the psychiatrist that was there, he loved Wellbutrin. Every new patient, he turned out to be like such a scam fraud guy, though. 4 counts of felony fraud had. But people really looked up to him when he was there, and nobody knew about his background and all that stuff. Anyway, he would put everybody on Wellbutrin. It was like, then I thought it was really weird. Like, why would you give the same medication to everybody? Mm-hmm. But it really worked for a lot of people. I guess that had something to do with a little bit of appetite suppressant, because a lot of these people were bulimics and overeaters and obese. And so I guess it had a little bit of a...
That makes sense.
Appetite depressant.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
Wow, it's really fascinating.
It is really fascinating. So how did you get yourself out of it? Like, what did you do?
So, I mean, I think that hurdle, the immediate. So, mine, I would say, I think it was. I mean, looking back now, I think it was a lot of situational. That was when my kids were kind of the hardest. I mean, really, it was like, and then the lack of sleep. And
so, you were never depressed when you're 20s.
It was a little bit, but not to really this extent. Uh-huh. And I remember it did seem situational. Like, I felt depressed after like a boyfriend had broken up with me, or this one felt more exactly like you said, like a state of being, like, and I kind of felt trapped. Like, I won't be able to get out of this because my kids are still here. And it's not like, you know, when you have tough kids, it's like, you know, it's not like
you can't just say goodbye.
Exactly. You can't divorce them.
Send them
it's
away.
Not like exactly. Yeah. So I felt very trapped. It was a very isolated feeling. And so I think that in all honesty, I think the medicine was sort of that saving grace just to get me sort of out of it. But then, you know, it was really important. Like, I started to just incorporate a lot more fun in my life. I think I realized that, like, I really need to. I mean, obviously, when you're a mom, like, your kids are your priority, but I needed to really just have some more fun in my life. And so I did that. And then I'm a huge proponent of so many of the natural components. I mean, I was really great about exercising. Sunlight, I think, is huge. fish oil, like, all those nutrients. Like, I was, you know, big on, I think, like, you know, I still take spirulina. But a lot of those supplements, because I think a lot of it too, it's like your body's missing some nutrients and things. You're not operating fully.
And it's so important to get a full physical yes. before even diagnosing oneself with depression, because yes. there are many vitamin deficiencies, like vitamin D deficiency, mm-hmm. et cetera, that can actually mask or mimic a true clinical depression.
Yes, it's a great point. Yeah. So, yeah, absolutely.
Thyroid issues.
Yep.
You know, those mm-hmm. are all really important to get screened and checked out yeah. for all that before, you know, just completely believing that you're psychologically or biochemically depressed.
Yes, exactly. And then I went to a therapist, mm-hmm. and that was great too.
And almost you? All the studies demonstrate that antidepressants are most effective when concurrently in psychotherapy. Mm-hmm. So it's not one or the other. Like
yes.
the metaphor that I was given was, it's like the medicine basically helps you open up the blinds so you can mm-hmm. see what the weather is outside, whether you should put a jacket on or not. It doesn't tell you anything more than that, so
right.
that you can just see more clearly, just like your glasses, right?
Yeah.
So it's not that anything's different out there in the world.
Right.
You're just seeing it in a way that you can't when you're all dark.
That's such a great
yeah.
analogy. Ooh, I love that.
Yeah.
What about you? What helped you?
Well, it was interesting because probably the time that I was the most depressed, again, it's like a cyclical thing back and forth between, yes, I had a breakup with a boyfriend, mm-hmm. I was mm-hmm. devastated, I was early in my internships, and mm-hmm. I just remember calling my supervisor and saying, I can't get out of bed, and mm-hmm. I just can't come in today, and he goes, we're going to hang up the phone, you're going to take off your pajamas, you're going to get in the shower, you're going to wash your hair, you're going to clean up, you're going to get your ass in here, and you're going to go see your clients. And I'm like, oh, how could I do that? And he was totally right. I couldn't give in to and it was that was at that moment that I realized that depression is your enemy. That's why
yes.
it was so important to not distinguish it, to not put it in the category of feelings, because mm-hmm. we want to embrace our feelings and know what those are. We don't
yeah.
want to ignore our feelings, but we do not want to embrace depression. Depression is an enemy. It is it's a fierce enemy
uh-huh.
that needs to be reckoned with.
Yes.
And so you have to stand up to it with counter action. So everything depression is telling you to do, trick it. Do
yes.
the opposite.
Yeah.
It says stay in bed. No, get your butt up.
Exactly.
If it says
yeah.
don't shower, there's no point.
Uh-huh.
No, get in the friggin' shower.
Wow.
If it says don't eat, no, make yourself eat.
Mm-hmm.
So I know it's like, it's a battle, and it doesn't feel right at first because it's not any of your energy that you want to be doing, but it's so critically important.
Mm-hmm.
The people who I've worked with who've really come through on the other end of a depression, it's because they just continue to practice
mm-hmm.
counteraction.
That's really great advice. Really great advice.
But same things like you're talking about. Exercise,
yeah.
that's a big one. Who mm-hmm. feels like exercising when they're depressed?
Yeah, exactly.
But you don't have to make it a grand gesture of
yes.
An Olympic gold medal.
Right.
It can simply be getting your
mm-hmm.
putting your tennis shoes on and walking down to the
yes.
end of the block and back.
Well, and I think it's important to do something you enjoy. Like, I think when people think exercise, they think, like, oh, I don't like the gym. Okay, what do you like? You know,
mm-hmm.
like, I mean, I just bought a pair of roller skates. Like,
oh, you did?
Yeah, I'm really excited.
I got a pair of brand new roller skates.
They're like inline skates, but like for people who are like not balanced like me. So it's like three wheels, but like two here and then like one up front. So it's a little bit easier than like the traditional rollerblades.
Where are you going to go rollerblading? Where are you going to feel safe?
You know what? I think I want to go down to that path of like Venice and Santa Monica.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that quintessential LA path, but I love that. And David is amazing on rollerblades.
Is he?
I mean, he's like, he can go backwards. Like he's so athletic, but so he's great on them. And I've always wanted to, but I'm like kind of skittish on the inline skates. So this, at least I can kind of keep up with him. So I'm excited. But my point is, yeah, like you know, like do something, you know, and I love those like old school, like I love ice skating. And so like, you know, we'll go to like that Burbank, you know, ice skating rink. And then like even swimming. I mean, I was like running for so long back in my like late 20s, and I burnt out my knees. And so the doctor's like, look, you can't run anymore. You know, while you heal. And I was like, what can I do? And he's like, you can swim. And I'm like, swim with like the old ladies? Like I loved it. I absolutely ended up loving it. So it's like, you know, maybe try something new that, you know, you haven't done.
I have to tell you a funny story about roller skating.
Oh, you're still thinking, what happened?
I suck at rollerblading.
Really?
When I was a kid, I was on roller skates all the time.
Yeah, I could see that.
And then when I got older, you know, you stopped doing that. And then somebody suggested, you know, let's go rollerblading. So rented rollerblades. And this was not big hills.
Yeah.
This was at Balboa Park, which is
yeah.
in San Fernando Valley.
Uh-huh.
And so my friend, he was a pretty good rollerblader. And so I put them on, I swear to God, with a 4% incline. Oh. I just freak out and I just fall. Oh, it's like, it's like, I don't know how to brake. I can't do it. So it just, I was bruised from, I'm shocked I didn't break my wrist. I would just constantly, I mean, for an hour, and I'm like, this is just not fun. But I, at the beach, it's cool because then if you can't stop, you just go right off into the sand.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great point. Yes, exactly. You're right. Because then you can, and the braking is the really tough part.
But I'm just afraid. Yeah. I know once I could master it, but I'm just afraid of seeing a hill. It's like, oh, I'm going to die. Exactly. I might as well fall.
Yes, exactly. Right. I mean, yeah, it is. It's really, really terrifying.
But yeah, I mean, exercising. I actually went through kind of a little, I'd say a mild depression for a while when I had to stop running because I have back issues. Mm-hmm. And it's not like I can never jog again, but it's not the same. And I cannot go for my 4 to 6 miles like I used to do, 5 to 6 days a week. So when I really couldn't do that anymore, I really felt a change in my neurochemistry upstairs. Mm-hmm. It was like,
yes.
I'm like not, because I wasn't getting that rush, the runner's rush.
Yes.
So now I do a lot of power walking and all that stuff. That's but as you're saying, anything active, it's just getting that stuff supercharged upstairs to start doing what it's supposed to be doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and it's hard, like you said, because you don't feel like it, but I think you just got to keep remembering, like, those endorphins, it's going to work the whole body. You're going to feel it. I mean, it'll be worth it in the end.
I also think that yoga is amazing for depression, for anxiety, just because it really takes you to a center of, it's so much about acceptance and self-love and compassion. Yes. I love our yoga teacher. Whenever we leave, she says something really beautiful with the namaste and, I just hope that everybody is able to find compassion for themselves today. Aww. She's such a sweetie. And it's so true. It's like, those little pearls of affirmations. Mm-hmm. Positive affirmations is another thing.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's like the contrary action, you know, the same sort of thing. Yeah.
So. And nutrition. So important. The regulation of our bodies and moods.
Absolutely. And I think the hard part is when you're depressed, you just want sugar because you want that, like, you know, sugar, the serotonin. Carbs, right? But yeah, but if you eat the whole foods, it's like you ultimately feel better. It's,
but you can always throw in a little bit of chocolate.
Absolutely. You know me. I've upped my ante with dark chocolate. Like, I'm having more and more and more and more all the time. But it's just so good.
Well, they even say that a little bit every day is actually good for you.
Yes.
Yeah, there's something in the dark chocolate that's supposed to be...
the antioxidants.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I love you for getting me that dark chocolate, by the way.
I'm glad that you like it.
So good.
Everywhere I go now, whether there's dark chocolate, I'm always looking at the label to see if I can find some new type that you have never had before.
You're so sweet. I love you.
Where do you buy your dark chocolate?
I got Whole Foods. It's organic, green and blacks.
Okay.
85%.
Uh-huh.
But the one you got me, the Hands Off My Dark Chocolate, not only do I love the name, but like it was just, I don't know, there was something really good about it. Like it was just, yeah. And so then I looked up on the web because I'm trying to get more and it's like in the Netherlands. Like I'm going to have to order it in Amsterdam. Maybe I'll just take a trip there.
There you go. I like it. I'll go with you. the darkest part of this conversation really is about suicide.
Yes.
And when somebody actually gets to that place, that is just, it's so tragic because somebody once said too, which I really love this, it stuck with me, suicide is a good question, but a terrible answer.
Oh my God, I got to write that down.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, it's like, okay, all of us like to know that we have an exit. Mm-hmm. So, you know that. We really do. At any point in our lives, for the most part, We can end it if we want to.
Yes.
But the idea is to not give power to that thought, because it is just a thought until you put action behind it.
And I want to speak a little bit about 13 Reasons, because I don't know if you've seen it.
I have not seen it. It's queued up in my...
It's a really well-done series, but I think it does glamorize suicide a lot for teens because the ultimate premise is, and I'm not going to give anything away, is, you know, this girl commits suicide and you kind of find out why. And a lot of the reasons that she's doing it is sort of this revenge. And so I can see kind of the power when teens watch this. It's like, okay, well, you know, I'm going to be dead, but I'm still going to be able to kind of haunt you, or I'm going to have the last word type of feeling. Like that's kind of the feeling that I got. And so,
which really is so tragic though, just away from the show for a minute, but that whole concept of people, it's a very selfish act.
Yes.
Suicide. You are leaving so much pain because the suicidal person often has no idea how much they are loved and how important that they are. So they really believe that they're doing people a favor by leaving. But it tortures people.
Absolutely.
When somebody that they love has taken their life.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. And it's really, it's Well, and you know, and there's you know, interestingly enough, we have a friend who had, I might have mentioned this, but she had postpartum psychosis.
Oh, wow.
And she ended up committing suicide.
She did?
Yes.
Leaving her little one behind?
She had two. She had an older one. It was like two. I mean, older, two at the time. And then she had a three-month-old.
Oh, no.
And it was like, you know, and so it's like, yeah, oh. I mean, I think, you know, and some, I'm also a big one for group support. Because mm-hmm. I think, you know, you feel so isolated when you're depressed or suicidal. And so it's like, you know, just knowing that, like, you are not alone. You are among others, and you know, there's always the suicide hotlines.
Hotline.
If you mm-hmm. don't feel like, you know, making the effort to find a therapist, there's the hotlines. There's, you know, I'm trying to think like if there's like a group support that, like, I'm sure if you, you know, anywhere you are, if you Google like group support for depression, I'm sure you could find it,
mm-hmm.
right in your area, like meetup groups and things like that. I think that's just so important.
Yeah, and boy, I've worked with a couple clients whose moms have hung themselves and all this thing. And, you know, one in particular was saying that she had no idea, like no idea that her mom masked it so much. And there's something called smiling depression, which is where sometimes you'll have somebody who's been very, very depressed and then all of a sudden it'll just seem like they're better and mm-hmm. healthier, but they haven't really done an intervention.
Mm-hmm.
Don't trust it.
Exactly.
Because that's sometimes that they have already picked their way out.
Yes.
They know when they're going to do it. They know how they're going to do mm-hmm. it. They've already, mm-hmm. you know, cleaned up shop in terms of what they need to handle last minute business and stuff. And then that's not a good sign.
That's exactly what happened with my friend.
I did.
She started to get better. She was out of the hospital. Her husband just went to work that day because he was like, okay, she's getting better. Mm. Everything's okay. It's awful. I mean,
how did
so I'm
he
glad
find her?
She had jumped off a building. I mean, it's just
terrible.
Isn't that awful? I mean, so I'm glad you brought that up because I think, I mean, of course you would think like, okay, they're getting better. Mm. They seem better. They're doing something. They're more active than they ever were. And it's really tricky. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's always, you know, in our work, in our practice, it's really a challenge because you want people to be able to feel safe to tell you their inner thoughts and what mm-hmm. they're feeling and thinking. And at the same time, you don't want to feel them to feel betrayed if you do have to break confidentiality.
Yes.
But that's why we do tell our clients up front that
right.
suicidality is a condition under which we yes. may break confidentiality because
exactly.
if we feel like we need to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, but I want people to feel safe that they can talk about that.
Absolutely.
But it's so hard sometimes to know when that person leaves your office that do they have a secret
yes.
plan? Do they not? You know, mm-hmm. just playing lip service to this.
Right,
you know?
Sure.
But we can't lock up everybody who says, oh, I'm feeling hopeless and helpless
absolutely.
Today and I think I could kill myself.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Also, I know that people have, it would not be uncommon for you to have even experienced this in your life, where somebody has used the threat of suicide as a manipulation.
Oh, absolutely.
And that is really not cool.
Right, exactly, like
it's
yes.
It's just really, really mm-hmm. not cool. Now, I'm not saying a manipulation like the person, you know, the one who really thinks they want to do it, but then doesn't end up doing it.
Yeah.
They said that they were going to. That's not what I mean by manipulation. But I mean, like, when you're having a fight with your, mm-hmm. you know, your lover, or your spouse, or whatever, and you go, if you do that, I'm just going to fucking kill myself.
Yes.
That is just, it puts the fear of God in people.
It's
it just
sick.
Puts so much anxiety. And then it traps people. It
yes.
makes you feel like you're a hostage.
Yes.
Because I actually, the sociopath that I finally mm-hmm. left now 9 years ago or 8 mm-hmm. years ago, he used to do that to me all the time. He said, if you leave me, I'll kill myself
oh
or
my
I'll kill
God.
You.
Oh.
So that was a good, I had good choices there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Until eventually, I really did. This sounds so awful, but when I really realized how bad this guy was,
mm-hmm.
I looked at him and I said, go for it.
Yeah.
Do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Stop talking about it.
Right,
do it.
Right. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Just tell me where you want me to send your daughter.
Right. Exactly.
You that know, and I
what was his reaction? Was he, like, shocked?
Shocked.
When you said, yeah, exactly.
It lost its power.
Right.
I literally had detached so much
yeah.
and was so knowing that I had to leave
mm-hmm.
this relationship that
sure.
it was, like, good, fine.
Exactly. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is just so hostage making. It just
uh-huh.
I don't have a lot of
course.
Tolerance for that.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Who would?
Oh have you ever
God.
Had anybody do that to you?
No. Thank God.
Thank goodness.
Thank God. But I can't imagine because you are sort of because I think you do. You feel such responsibility to say the right thing and oh my God and
well,
oh,
it helped just a lot when I finally clarified in my mind that this was a sociopath.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Antisocial personality disorder. I wasn't
right.
dealing with somebody who had a heart.
Yes.
You know, so.
It was rational. Right.
Yeah. So it was like, all right then.
Yeah.
Sure.
Right. God, absolutely terrifying.
Absolutely terrifying.
Wow.
But okay, so back to like counteraction. That's yes. a good one. Medication evaluation.
Yes.
Nutrition. Exercise. Talk therapy.
Talk therapy.
It's, I mean, it's, boy, I was in therapy. Helped a lot.
It
having somebody
really
with compassion and empathy who can kind of hold your hand through it and let you know that there is another side.
And I think also there was something for me about knowing, like, okay, I have this thing to look forward to, you know, mm-hmm. once a week. And it mm-hmm. sort of, like, got me through the week. It was like, mm-hmm. okay, a couple more days till I see my therapist. Like, it was nice. It was nice to have that anchor,
mm-hmm.
I think, for me. So that was really important. I'm also a huge fan of, like, music therapy. I think
sure.
that, you
and
know.
And art therapy.
Yes. All that. And all of those things that sort of tap into different parts of us. I really like that.
Mm-hmm. There was a good yeah. book out too a while ago called Beyond Prozac.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that one has uh-huh. a lot of the things that we're talking about.
Oh, really?
About
yeah, that makes sense.
Different things yeah. to try. And you know what? Also, it, burden your friends. You know, that's what friends
oh,
are for.
Oh, yes.
Like, it's not,
a,
I mean,
burden,
a burden,
I thought you said.
Yeah, yeah. It's okay to be a burden mm-hmm. at times. Not
Absolutely.
Chronically. Not, but friends are there for us to mm-hmm. to share some of our darkest things.
Yes.
And so, you know, do a mutual share session. If you
yeah.
can't afford therapy or you don't have mm-hmm. a place to go or that's just not in your area at this time or
yeah.
within reason. I mean, there are...
So true.
People, or like you said, support groups.
Yes.
There are free support groups,
mm-hmm.
even places like 12-step meetings, like
I was
Codependency
thinking
Anonymous or
yes.
things, or Al-Anon meetings. You know, a lot of people have experienced depression or know somebody who is going through a depression.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I think it's just as important for people not in the depressed state who are in relationship to somebody mm-hmm. who's mm-hmm. depressed to get support.
Oh, my God.
Because it's a very hard thing to
oh,
stay...
That's- Yes.
Yeah, go say what.
It's very difficult to be in the. I think it's sometimes like just as hard to be in the spouse
sure.
position or the partner position
because you don't want to say the wrong thing, and you are a little bit walking on eggshells, and you're scared for the person, and
it's
scared
so
that they
hard.
Might do something.
Yes.
And you know it can be frustrating too, so don't feel bad because you know this person isn't being rational
mm-hmm.
when somebody's talking about all dark things about themselves and
yes.
only sees the negative. And just is mired in that experience.
Yes,
it's
yes.
so hard to get through to them. You want to shake them sometimes and say, no,
yes.
that's not true. Stop
exactly.
telling yourself
yes.
this is bullshit.
Or and it's hard to be with somebody who's not motivated. You're mm-hmm. like, come on, let's go out. And they're like, no, you know, and
right.
you get frustrated, sure, because you feel helpless.
Yeah.
The other tool that I wanted to mention that I just made recently is... I just made it. It's called the Depression Ring Tool.
Oh.
And basically, I started to write down all the things that helped me when I was sad or depressed.
Uh-huh.
And I cut them out and made like a business-sized card of each one and laminated it, cut a hole in it, and made like a keychain ring around it. So, you know, it's just sort of, you can like look at it and be like, okay.
I love it.
So, yeah. So it's like one of them's like, you know, music. Because it's like when you're in that state, you're just not thinking clearly. Like you, like we're in a great state, so it's like we can think, you know,
sure,
rationally. But like when you're so down, it's almost like kind of like, you know, your body telling you what to do. It's almost like, okay, here's something you should do, and just
yeah.
do it. You know. So
boy, I bet there's we gotta get some angel investors out there.
Yeah, exactly for the depression tool.
To market this thing.
Yes.
I love it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So. Yeah, so, I mean, you know, whatever works for you. But even those, like, adult coloring books, I found my clients really like those,
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm. Just even a little, like, on your iPhone, going into your notes and just writing
yes.
10 things that you will do when you are in a state of depression.
Yes.
And just do them.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, you're not going to feel like doing them. It's fake it till you make it. You
exactly.
just have to do it.
Yes, exactly. 100%. Yeah.
And you know, I think that the presentation of ourselves can have a big impact too, like the not showering, the not wanting to just
yeah.
pick out one of your nicest shirts and just put that
mm-hmm.
on, because sometimes we can feel better when we are perceiving ourselves
yes.
as more together.
That makes complete sense. Yeah, they say that like if you don't feel like smiling and you smile, it does changes
yes.
like brain chemistry or something. Yeah.
I do practice that a lot actually.
Yeah.
Like if I'm in a kind of a cruddy mood,
right.
I'll just start to smile, or if I'm saying something negative to somebody, to shift it into something positive,
yes.
or something negative to myself, shift it into something positive.
Mm-hmm.
I think gratitude list is really important
oh,
too.
Love gratitude
sometimes
list.
All we do is see the negative in
yes.
something, and there are still bright and shining things. I mean, the truth is if you're breathing, if you're here to talk about it, something's mm-hmm. going right in your life.
It's so true. It's so true.
You know who I understand are the highest risk of suicide?
Isn't it old? Don't tell me. Isn't it like men who are like 60 and older?
Narcissistic men.
Oh,
who
interesting.
Have loss of money or loss
yeah.
of job.
Mm. Right, because that's like their whole identity.
They get highly, highly depressed.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
And I'm not quoting accurate statistics, though. That's the highest rate.
But that's one of them. Yeah.
So, you know, if you have a partner or something, and your husband, and you tend to find him to be rather narcissistic.
Right.
And there's a big, you're at greater risk. You got to pay a little bit more attention to your guy or woman.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. That's good advice. Yeah.
Yeah. Because they don't feel like they have anything to live for then. This is what made them, you know, proud of themselves, and that people would look up to them. And,
sure.
You know, like a demotion or loss of a job.
Yeah. Those
things can be really harsh. And also, I think just giving up or the loss of the will to live often happens when couples who have been married for a really long time and one of the spouses passes away.
Yes.
And the other one just can't see the reason for living. Mm. And that's all these other people. Like, sometimes my stepmom talks in such a down way. I just want to be with your father. I just want to be with your father. And I'm like, he wants to be with you too, but that'll come. You know, there's no time frame up there.
Right.
You know, so you have these grandchildren. You have a wedding to look forward to. Mm-hmm. You're going to have great grandchildren in the not too distant future.
That's nice.
Perk her up for like a moment or two.
Right.
Then she still goes back into that. I think it's important for all of us to remember that we do have people who we impact their lives and we matter to them.
Yes. So true. Wow. That's nice that you were so supportive. So sweet. She's lucky to have you, really.
Oh, I love her. She was a good stepmom. You know, not too many people can say that about stepmom.
It's so true.
Actually, that's such a stereotype that isn't true. There are tons of great step-parents out there.
That's nice to hear.
Yeah.
Remember that movie? Was
Stepmom.
I was hysterical. Darryl.
Oh, with Julia Roberts and Susan Sarandon.
But I'll never forget the line that she said. She said, "I'm scared my daughter is going to be happy with you walking down the aisle." And then I remember the stepmom saying, "And I'm scared she's not." Like, it was so, it was just like they both were in the same place. Oh, it was so touching. I could be hysterical. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, my goodness.
Got off topic, but... Wow.
All right, so let's say you're resonating with this and you're listening or you know somebody is. How do you find the right therapist for you? That is a critical component. I think it's so important that you do a lot of screening and a lot of interviewing. It's always good to have a recommendation from a trusted friend or doctor or, you know, somebody who you really respect their input. But even if you connect with someone and you just don't feel like it's right just because someone else said it was, if it's not a good match for you, then it's okay. You've got to keep searching.
100%. And I'm always about like having that 10-minute free consultation, just clicking to see on the phone. I mean, sometimes you can tell a little bit, you know, maybe their style isn't right for you. They're a little too abrupt or I don't know, not compassionate or not warm or, you know, whatever. I think you can tell a little bit just in that initial brief consultation.
For me, it's voice.
Oh, yeah.
If I get an icky feeling when I hear someone, even by the way their outgoing voicemail is, if I don't like the sound of it, I just know it's not going to work for me.
Because
voice is so important to me. And I've had several people in my career say, I called like 10 people, and when I got your voicemail, you're the one that I wanted to see.
Way.
And I'm like, well, let me get to know you a little bit, make sure that's still good.
No, right.
It's like, hands down, just because of that tone.
Wow,
or
interesting.
Probably has such early transference reaction stuff, you know, like,
yes,
you know, just whatever we find to be soothing.
Yes.
And I want somebody to kick my ass too. I don't want somebody who's just going to nod their head.
Yeah.
But I didn't when I first started because I had so much shame.
Yeah.
You know, so much of my therapy initially was about shame. Needed somebody really kind and sensitive.
Sure. Right. You know? Depends on what we need in our life. It's so true.
Right. What about for you? What do you look for in a
therapist? It's so funny because like I've had some really great ones over the years. I need a little bit. So I need one who's very, very insightful and very, very bright because I feel like I have a lot of great friends and they can give me, you know, different perspectives. But so I need someone who's going to show me something that I hadn't heard or thought about.
Good.
I like opening up and sort of, you know, and I'm really all about like owning my stuff and accountability. So I'm willing to go there. You just have to show me, you know. But yeah, I need somebody to kick my butt too. Like I don't need like I went to one. I remember on the East Coast one time. She didn't say one word the entire time. I was like, yeah, we'll get a roll.
Oh my goodness.
But anyway. with that, it
Kelly,
was,
I yes. forgot we were on the radio today. Isn't we were just crazy? Shooting the shit here.
So good. Oh, my God. What a great
time. Oh, my gosh. We're
time.
Actually out of time. So who are we? You found this guest for us next week.
Very excited. So there's an author called Fumio Sasaki. He's a Japanese minimalist, and he wrote the book Goodbye Things. He lives in a 250-square apartment. I think he has two utensils, one shirt, one pair of pants. I mean, it's kind of cool. I was like, that's really cool. So I'm interested to hear kind of, you know, that minimalist movement and how
awesome.
He did it.
And we're going to yeah. have his editor, Jeff, is going
yes,
to be
in his place. In, yes, because he speaks Japanese. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
All right, then. Everybody, right. thanks for listening, and hope you got some useful info yes. from us today. And we love y'all.
And if you have any questions, visit us on Instagram at Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly, or Twitter at DocTherapist1. Thanks so much, guys.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.